with every cancellation, every postponement, now is the time to start reading. And it was never like there was never a time to read. Books are king. That's how we're going to increase your knowledge. And if you love to save on books, movies, and music, you've actually come to the right place. Navigate to Alibris.com, a premier online marketplace for independent sellers of new and used books, music, and movies, as well as rare and collectible titles. We connect people who love books, music, and movies to more than 175 million items from thousands of sellers worldwide. This is a partnership with independent professional sellers. And Marty and Dick, the founders, decided early on that Alibris would be an at-risk partner, not a listing service. This approach attracted a large number of independent sellers and now enables Alibris to offer over 100 million books for sale. This is more than Barnes & Noble and maybe even Amazon together. Right now, they have a $20 off sale, and you can use coupon code NORA, N-O-R-A, to take $10 off of an order of $75 or more. You can use Roberts, take $20 off of about $135 or more. And then you can use Storm, S-T-O-R-M. I will have all these coupon codes as a reminder in today's podcast. So again, navigate to Alibris.com for all of these deals and more, and tell them that Felicia sent you. Now back to the podcast. Horoscope Virgo, September 13th, 2020. To co-create will be a thrill whether you think it's going well or not. Creative collaborations are as particular a partnership as any love match. Truest thing never heard. I believe my success at script writing, editing my books, and I do say books because I think I have more than one in me, are going to be a collaborative effort. Not just me taking a subordinate role as a cheerleader, not just sniping, but a real collaboration is recognizing each of the collaborators' strengths and not sending or giving snarky comments. If you're going to give criticism, it should be followed by how you can make it better. That goes with the role as an editor, that goes as a role as just a friend, or even the role as an agent. I think a lot of people do that well. And that's one of the reasons why I actually signed up for Writers Duo, because I believe I have a great idea. I'm just going to need work rounding it out and producing something that someone would actually want to read. That's the whole goal, right? I'm going to freely admit that I got right on writing this podcast, not only as our script for this historical fiction kind of podcast, in an effort to have something to present for my, for the fiction, podcast competition, because I thought it was more, or I wanted more than what my other channel is all about. I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to somehow merge both of those channels into one. This week's podcast is going to be similar to that. This is the day that I usually just produce my Tennessee Fro is Reading podcast, where I read and I comment on shows as well as books. And I actually read from my own works. But this is
just as detailed as being a showcase for my own work, because I'm actually writing kind of like the old school radio shows with sound effects and different actors and actresses. But I'm doing it all myself. I'm writing the script, kind of like the Tyler Perry of podcasts, so to speak. But I don't have a sponsor, but that's neither here nor there. So I was thinking about potentially asking friends to read for the series, but I wanted to just basically try it out to see, number one, how it is going to be received. And my biggest thing is just making sure that I record without, you can't hear the background of the TV going. I'm having to get used to the silence again. And then I had to come up with an idea, what I wanted to write about. I've been resisting writing about apocalyptic kind of things that we're living in about coronavirus, but who better than a board certified physician to write, not so much on the level of Stephen King or Robin Cook or even Dean Koontz, but just the reality of the times that we're living in. I sit and wonder just how many healthcare professionals have had similar conversations that I actually am trying to script for the main characters, Kat, Catherine Sloper Cooper, and her husband, the ex-NFL football player, Brian Cooper. I think the encounters are less dramatic, but they're just as significant. How to take care of family members that are falling ill when you become the primary caretaker of elderly parents, or having to bury your own children. I can't even imagine any of that. And if you are considered an essential worker, you're not getting combat pay anymore. Or if you contract the disease at the hospital or wherever that you work, the hospital is blaming it on you and they're saying you can't get disability or they won't approve disability. I think it's all whack. But I think all of those things, these are the reality. It's the new reality TV. These types of conversations and fears are being carried out on a day-to-day basis. COVID-19 complicated many things. It ripped off the bandages of our precarious healthcare system, our social support system, all the rollbacks in unemployment, disability, the inequity of the education, inequitable housing, how relationships that were actually already on a rocky stance are now even rockier and have been imploded by this scourge. And it also reveals how much pain people live with daily and every single day, generationally. The main character, Brian Cooper, and I'm hopeful that I'm able to portray him not as the typical tired Negro that a lot of women are used to, but the reality is that an African-American male from the South, now thrust onto the stage as the NFL, has so many psychological, physiological traumas that they actually have to deal with, and they still are required to still be successful. But they're hurting, and they have been hurt, and they're so damaged. And I'm trying to, I don't want it to necessarily just be all entertainment and to be so far to the left not to be believable, but I want that suspense of disbelief. There can be actually very wealthy women, professional women, that don't have bad credit, that pay cash for everything just because they can, but they are very successful, and especially some Black women, how unequally yoked that they can be, even if both of the relationships are made up of professionals, how still unequally from a psychological background, financial, educational, how they can still be so unequally yoked. This couple in particular has several challenges, just being Black and surviving in this country, but also how they survived together. They got together on kind of shaky grounds, and I'm hoping you'll be able to see that in this particular episode, and how COVID just complicates all of that thing. And you'll also see how financially unstable, especially the ex-NFL star was, and then COVID happened. So join me now for the next episode, Survival Code, the not so okay corral, Code Blue. And thank you for listening.
死了这么多
，so many dead.
一万名居民的居住部分是鬼城。
A living pot of 10,000 residents is a ghost town.
冷藏拖拉机拖车在街上。
Refrigerated tractor trailers line the streets.
现在唯一的活动是小队的和危险品的防护服挨家挨户拆除尸体。
The only activity now is the squads in hazmat suits going door to door removing the bodies.
我现在是一个孤儿，妈妈和爸爸的迹象表明，政府官员在几分钟内就死在那家医院地板上的托盘上。
I'm an orphan now. Ma and Papa, scientists and government official died within minutes on pallets on the floor of that hospital alone.
没有时间准备他们在几个小时内火化之前回到祖先那里，那就是现在的国家命令。
There was no time to prepare them to go home to the ancestors before their cremation within hours. That is the state mandate now.
我的兄弟死了，没有开始恢复，然后变得更糟。我 sister 只是从那些白色袋子里拿出来的，我的侄子可能成为我的孤儿。我们可能全部被消灭。
My brother diagnosed, started to recover, then he got worse. My sister-in-law was taken out in one of those white bags. My nephew might become an orphan. My Buddha, we may all be wiped out.
他们三倍。
The numbers coming from my country.
自我国的数字。
Triple them. It's daytime, April 1996, the Sloper family home on 125th in Amsterdam, Harlem. This is a flashback to the Stoner engagement party. This is the new Rona Barrett of Harlem. That's a historical reference, y'all. You gotta look it up. Kat spent most of the day primping and reapplying makeup in her French provincial style bedroom. She wipes it all off, scrubbing her face clean, not wanting to get any of it on the off the rack dress from Lord and Taylor. It was a soft yellow shift dress with an illusion neckline with hand stitch embroidered flowers. She slips it. Actually, she'll slip anything on. But she does slip on her grandmother's pearls and earrings and the gold Cartier watch. She puts on her Columbia sweatshirt. She looks down into the back garden and notices Brian and his cousin Rodney. Rodney is a junior partner at Bear Stearns. He had been in New York for only 3 years. There was a half bottle of cognac with a familiar skunky aroma wafting up to her open window. Kat goes to her door, and there goes Brian's sister, Brenda, fussing with her mother as she tries to latch up her mother's girdle. And then there is my mother chasing Lorna like Celie in The Color Purple with the hot comb. A scene straight out of a country as Pride and Prejudice. Cat says, yeah, I need a breath of fresh air for a minute. Cat goes underneath her bed, pulling out a large painted cardboard box containing a hand-painted, hand-blown bong, a gift from her hippie medical school roommate from Oregon, specially made by the hippie roommate's mother. She grabs it and a bag of Jamaican gold marijuana and heads downstairs. She walks into the garden where she comes upon Brian and Rodney, and they both turn towards her. She holds up first the bong and then the bag of weed, and they both applaud. Cat, I thought we could use a bit of uplift. Rodney, why, the quiet straight-laced ones always got the good shit. Cat, because nobody's watching us. Every dab I came out with did a lot of cocaine before being presented. I did bypass that little ritual. Brian, well, I have to report to camp in less than 2 months, so there will be no token over here. So just cognac and cigars for me. Cat, well, I need something just to take the edge off. Way too hysterical female in there. She takes out her golden lighter, lights up the bong, taking a long, deep drag, exhaling skunky smoke rings, passing it and the lighter to Rodney, who repeats. Then Brian picks up the lighter, exhaling his cigar smoke, turns over the lighter, noting the scripted letters ERJ and then the Cartier on the bottom. You just can't have a Bic. ERJ, was that already on it when you want it on eBay? Cat takes the lighter and another deep inhale, shoulders dropping even further. You don't even know the half of it. This house, paintings, my bedroom furniture, this iron furniture out here, it was all handed down through my father's family. My grandmother, Ruthie, handed the lighter down to my father, and she inherited it from her mother, Mamie, who bought it for her husband, my great-grandfather, Ellsworth Raymond Johnson. Ellsworth? What kind of country-ass name is that? And he was from New York? He came here when he was 10 from South Carolina. Family and close friends. She pauses, taking another deep toke of the bong. Exhales and slips deeper on the cushioned chair, passing the bong and the lighter to Rodney. Called him Bumpy. I think that was on his rap sheet too, says Moore in a sigh. A family member with a rap sheet? That's crazy. And he starts laughing. He starts to light the bong slowly, drops with realization dawning on his face. Wait, Bumpy Johnson? The gangster? Your granddaddy. Brian stops mid-nod, taking in the house and the lighter, both staring at Cat agog. Story has it, Grandpappy paid cash for this place. And his daughter had a cut of the numbers business and clubs for years, paying the taxes on it. It was placed in trust, passing on to direct descendants. What do you know about my great-grandfather? Rodney says, the protege of the Queen of Numbers racket of Harlem, Stephanie St. Clair. They are Black history elite. The fuck you aren't related to all that? What you know about dad? Snapping the fingers. Y'all background more squeaky straight laced than my family. So, let me get this straight. My Black princess dad is the granddaughter of the most notorious gangster in Harlem. He made Harlem. This was Hood Central. Actually, this is the house that the numbers built. But my and father made legitimate. Your beginnings don't make how you end. Straight from the playbook of Bumpy. Oh, that's why you came south every summer. Yeah, after Bumpy passed in the 60s, his sister Mabel Sugar came back south and settled at the farm in Soddy Daisy, opening up the Sugar's Rib Shack on the ridge. I think she made more money serving illegal moonshine and running numbers than her restaurants made. Brian pours himself a large glass of cognac. I am so not ready for this. For what? All of this. He hears the shrieking from his sister, Linda. I am not ready to be the man of the hour. I just want comfort and to play ball. All of this is your birthright. You were born into it. I can never fit in. But do you want to? Bumpy was not in some nice Robin Hood. Bumpy ran a violent ship. His gun had more bodies on it than Capone's. The word was he was angry. He didn't have boys and mostly ignored his daughters, who soaked everything around them. My grand Ruthie was a math whiz. I like to think if she was born to any other man, she would have worked for NASA or even IBM, but she wasn't allowed to. Same with my sisters. No one pushed them either. They're just happy to be invited to the party. There's no way I wouldn't have. She takes Bumpy's lighter, holding it up to the light glinting off its engraving. She smiles and lights up and takes a deep drag. Well, sliding up next to him, the dress has been ordered and fitted, deposits paid, and invitations sent. We are doing this. She smiles, hugging him around his neck. He's shaking his head, succumbing to the high musings of his wife. Rodney, I am so not high enough for this conversation. He takes a bong, the lighter, and inhales deeply. Now I am. Laughs like a lunatic. Okay, Gerps, now we are back to Valentine's Day 2020. It is late evening. Fast forward. Cat sniffs soft pink and yellow roses her mother sent her. She slips into her Oscar de la Renta gown. The dress is a fitted halter with a gold embroidered flowers, making up the shoulder straps with an illusion neckline. And back, and there's a deep back over the black tulle with a plunging neckline. She and her mother bought this and several other pieces at his Paris salon 2 years ago, and she never had any occasion to wear it. The only thing she likes about the condo on Fifth, besides the views and the is the Cohiba humidor-like closet. This dress is so breathtaking, it has its own customized section of the closet. Yeah, the thread is real gold, y'all. And the gold is matched perfectly with her Judith Lieber gold brick bag. So when her husband's assistant called to set up when the sedan would pick her up for dinner at La Galoue, and then when the tickets arrived for the Metropolitan Ballet by courier, she would take the time off of her schedule and prepare for the entire day. Cat twirls one more time before heading down to the waiting sedan that spirits her to La Galoue. She is seated at the table and waits for about 45 minutes. Two glasses of Chardonnay later, she signals the waiter, paying the tab. She puts her head down, walking past a woman sneezing into her handkerchief. This woman thinks she is battling seasonal allergies, but she would be diagnosed with COVID in 2 weeks and gasping for breath. This woman would go on to infect her husband, the waiter that served her, and the women in the bathroom stall that same night. After Kat gets into the car, she sits waiting outside of the Met initially. But she knows the no-show at La Galoue means another no-show at the Met. The driver comes around again to open her door. a couple passing trying to see inside the sedan. This is the lawyer thought to be patient zero. The lawyer is proud that he remembered Valentine's Day, but wanted to get inside. Felt like he was coming down with the flu and wanted to get out of the rain that had just started. Another near miss. Cat rolls down her window asking the driver to drive on, instructing him to stop at the downtown bar. After arriving at the downtown bar, the driver goes around to the passenger side, opening a black umbrella, shielding Cat from the misty cold wind that makes New York awful. Cat carefully steps a Christian Louboutin shoe foot onto the damp sidewalk. She immediately notices the scene through the window. Cat says, "Wait here as long as possible." The driver says, "Yes, miss." Cat wraps her coat a little bit tighter, taking in the scene. Partially clad women clipping what is more than likely illegal cohibas and lighting with jet lighters. She steps inside, noticing Rodney, who then notices her, who breaks away from the chatting up of the waitress. He takes two glasses of cognac with him and approaches Cat. "Hey, cuz, a bit overdressed, aren't you?" Cat takes in the round caricature of the now older ex-Bear Stearns exec that she smoked weed with all those years ago. Had it really been 20 years? "Yeah, well, I got all out. I go all out when my husband sets up a date night for us. That I show up and he wigs out on me." "Rodney, well, tonight, where were you supposed to be?" He places the cohiba in his mouth and the Playboy bunny suited waitress appears in lights. Cat rolls her eyes. "Lago Lu and the Met for the ballet." "Wait, he set that up?" "Well, he must have forgotten this is the night for hanging with the bros." "Yeah, I'm sure." Cat spies her husband chatting up women she recognizes as female sportscasters at ESPN with the newscaster on air for CBS, who she is sure is a transsexual female, but has not had all the facial feminizing top surgery. She walks over to Brian. "Hi, ladies," smiles, signaling for them to get the hell away. "Brian, where were you?" "Here, like I am every Friday night." She opens up her coat, then the tickets to the Met, slapping him on the forehead. "Ow, seriously? You set this up and no show?" "My sister set this shit up. I guess months ago," he sighs, walking over to the bar. The bartender pours a glass of crowns. "So you can't even be bothered to cancel or to show up for Valentine's Day for your wife. Dinner and a show is so you." "No, dinner and a show is so you. You forgot I grew up here. The overpriced restaurant and show is no better than Chinese food at Chan's and a show at the Apollo. That is New York for me. Not posing at those places or shit even here. You know, I'm sure they're going to be overrun at the ER. I'm out." She opens up her Judith Lever and shoves a letter into his chest. "This is the final foreclosure notice. They serve this today. We have 45 days to vacate the place on 5th. We don't have to do shit if you stroke that check." She steps to him, sighs, takes his cigar in a deep drag. Rodney smiles and exhales. Takes his drink, knocking it back in one gulp. "Hell no, nigga, ain't doing that." Cat executes a perfect about face, rolls her eyes at Rodney, who toasts her to the driver, Columbia ER Midtown. The driver closes the door, glances at the bar as he collapses the umbrella, and gets behind the wheel and drives away. Ugh. So typical tired Negro of Cat's husband. "How in the world you forget Valentine's Day and not get cut? I don't know, but I admire Kat's restraint. So, this is even later, Valentine's Day 2020, the same evening, and they, meaning Kat and the driver, arrive to the ER. The driver initially drives up to the entrance with at least 20 ambulances stacked up, waiting to roll in their patients. However, this just denotes a backlog. Even on its most busiest date, you got to understand that the ED ambulance bay is not this stocked. The reason is that they can't just drop the patients and roll it because the ED is over capacity and fit to bursting. And then as they drive along, there's a long line of patients in wheelchairs sitting on the ground, wrapping around the corner. It's standing room only in the ER. And this is even more extra than what you would expect Valentine's Day, February. But this is 2020. Kat, pull around to the MD entrance. The driver, are you sure, miss? I can take you anywhere in the city. Nah, thanks, but this is where I need to be right now. The driver pulls up to the doctor entrance. He goes around letting her out. Kat notices the nursing ED director leaning against the wall with her face shield up. She thanks the driver, giving him a $100 tip, and walks over to the nurse. Taking a break? In a lilting Caribbean accent that I'm not going to try to hack up. It's crazy all day. There really is something in the air. Pneumonia, pneumonia, pneumonia. Everybody's lung looking like they're vaping and never smoked a day in their lives. She pauses, noting Kat's shoes and dress. She spins her around after she takes her hand. Ooh, you look so good. Why are you here in this hell? Plans change. I thought you guys would need my help. Well, of course we do. She takes Kat's arm, ushering her through the door. They stop by the Omni cell and getting her a fresh pair of scrubs. She hands her an isolation gown, then goes and grabs one of the last patient possession plastic bags and hands it to Kat. I'll let everyone know you're here. See you in 5. They slap elbows. Kat strips off the $11,000 dress and $800 shoes, stuffing both into the patient possession plastic bags, reducing them to clothes from the Navy and Dirty Kids. She stuffs both in her locker, puts on scrubs in her jacket, her N95 mask and face shield, hangs her stethoscope around her neck, her uniform for the next 18 hours in the Columbia downtown ER. This scene would repeat itself over and over again through March 19th. Little would Kat know that this pillar of strength of a nurse would die of a virus she wouldn't contract COVID at work, but from her goddaughter, the Amazon worker in Jersey, visiting her godmother, who wanted to nurse her back to health. As Kat's driver closed her door at the bar, Brian's friend, his group's patient zero, would come in and sneeze 3 times, spraying and infecting everyone at that bar. There is no ventilation, his particles contaminating everyone, including the bartender and all those bunny costume waitresses. There were 22 people in that bar that night. 21 would be infected by coronavirus. Kat wouldn't be because she left. There would be only 2 survivor minus their legs, Brian and Rodney. Everybody else would become the first recorded deaths of COVID-19 in New York City. And that's how we'll end this episode of Survival Code, Episode 3. Hails to the Gnaw and Tired Negroes. I don't know if I just had more mimosas than I should have, but I thoroughly enjoyed recording this episode. I've also enjoyed trying to use Maximally writing software Final Draft as well as trying to figure out how I can get a collaboration using the Writers Duo software. I'm going to probably, unless I can find it in the final draft or the Writers Duo, I'm going to register this later on with the Writers Guild, like I've done my previous podcast and trips. Protection is 9/10 of the law, and I don't want anybody ripping off my idea and not giving the sister credit, just saying. I'm also excited about next steps I will be taking with my book, Not My Family. Something is happening, only positivity. Who knows? I will be hopefully in a position that I could actually make a living and still live comfortably doing what I love to do. I get paid all day long writing nonfiction as the job that that's my day job that's actually supporting my dreams. And hopefully I will also get paid appropriately as I write fiction stuff. So who knows? It'll all work out. So don't hesitate to navigate to my over 40 and unapologetically nerdy website to listen to other episodes 1 and 2 of this multi-part serialized fictional podcast. Then you can also just check out my online bookstore, Chatterbooks, which is updated weekly to reflect my finds and suggestions from other podcasts. I'm a voracious reader, like to read. I would prefer to read than do anything. But it also not only has books that I have been reading, have read, or want to read. There's swag from Star Trek fandom, biographies, and others. You can also get some great coffee at Writer's Block Coffee, and I'll probably be updating that soon with black and brown coffee as soon as I can work out the subscription once I'm back into Tennessee firmly. But in the meantime, navigate to Writer's Block Coffee using my promo code TimFroisReading for 10% off of your order and shipping. And if you want a chuckle, or you need to ship someone a bag of gummy penises, navigate to shipabagofdicks.com for a chuckle and to sit in to anonymously send that, as well as glitter bombs to someone that just really getting on your nerves. And if you would like to leave a non-trolling comment or suggestions on how I should either script or additional characters that you would like to see in the podcast, leave me this message at tinfroisreading at gmail.com. And if it is non-trolly, I'll actually give you a shout out online. And stay tuned for episode 4, Survival Code. Double XL depends in a hybrid Land Rover with the black Thelma and her mama Louise. And thank you for joining me. Bye, y'all.